This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. We just heard Jay Fonseca urge the media to get out of their bubble. That's what some concerned citizens are doing on YouTube, making content that the algorithm delivers to the opposite bubbles by design. Free of old-school gatekeeping, YouTube hosts a wide political spectrum from the furthest right to the fringiest left, reaching some of the youngest eyes and ears. On the Media producer Micah Loewinger tells the story of three young viewers whose perspectives were changed and their identities shaped by their YouTube diets.
In 2016, YouTube turned a 16-year-old named Jake into a neo-Nazi.
No fascist in their right mind would ever identify as a neo-Nazi, but if you had to ask me to identify myself at the time, I think I would have said something stupid like a pan-nationalist white identitarian.
Based on what I've heard from others like him, Jake's radicalization was fairly standard. Like thousands of teenage boys, he was a big fan of the popular gamer PewDiePie. As YouTube's single biggest creator, he can have a pernicious effect on viewers, slipping edgy or even racist jokes into otherwise whimsical videos.
Did you know that Indians have poopoo in their brains?
That's a blatant racist lie.
Yeah, but still a defamation.
Eventually, Jake stumbled upon the racist prankster Max Mofo, a white Australian YouTuber who calls up black people to mock them.
Yeah, listen, man, I came to McDonald's this time before I got like a burger.
Okay, I understand what you're saying, sir.
Listen, man, I can't even got a burger in there.
Jake says that as he searched for other offensive comedians, YouTube began to suggest more political content.
I think we should start a petition, say, feminism must be classified as a mental illness.
Carl Benjamin, better known as Sargon of Akkad, is a smooth-talking right-wing commentator who tried to leverage his 900,000 subscribers in a losing bid for a European parliamentary seat earlier this year.
Carl Benjamin posted on Twitter that he wouldn't even rape Labour MP Jess Phillips. Today he said he wouldn't apologise for what he called his crimes against political correctness.
Radicalization on YouTube is a byproduct of its business model. The more time you spend viewing videos, the more money YouTube and its creators make. So, its algorithm queues up a list of related videos in a sidebar to keep you watching. This system can make it seem like fringe beliefs are more acceptable, more widely held than they are, by plunging the viewer into a deep well of extremist videos, each one leading to another. And the well gets darker the deeper you go. The videos the algorithm queued up for Jake eventually brought him to the really nasty white nationalist part of YouTube, where junk science is used to justify white superiority.
People who say that there really can't be any intellectual discrepancies between the races have a huge problem in terms of science.
Of course, plenty of people encounter racist things online without turning into racists. But Jake was at an especially vulnerable time in his life. He was struggling to reconcile his socially conservative upbringing with the realization that he's gay.
You go through this overcorrection of, I'm going to be the most absolute opposite form of that I can find. So yeah, I spent a lot of my middle teens being this overly macho, angry little fascist.
What interested me most about Jake's story was not how he fell down the rabbit hole. It was how he climbed out. His parents and high school teachers knew that he was going around saying horrible things about Jews and Muslims, waxing fondly on the legacy of Benito Mussolini. And they tried to intervene, but it was no use. Ultimately, what saved Jake was yet another YouTuber.
So, life is basically sad. And in capitalist society, that sadness is a sense of isolation, an anxiety that there's nothing more to life than acquiring 1990s collector's edition Tampa Bay Buccaneers / Slim Jim beer steins until you die. Fortunately, thanks to fascism, you don't have to.
Natalie Nguyen, better known by her YouTube moniker, ContraPoints. Her videos are more like John Waters films than webcam vlogs. They're campily lit and costumed solo productions. Wynn's impact on YouTube culture is so notable that the Library of Congress recently said it was archiving her entire channel.
Fascism promises you a part in something greater than yourself, a homeland for your people, a sense of belonging to a tradition that stretches back thousands of years. And as
in this video, called Decrypting the Alt-Right, she appears in sparkling red lipstick and wavy blonde hair, in front of floral wallpaper, alternating empathy with irony. She describes why people fall for fascist propaganda. She's a 30-year-old trans woman, not someone you'd expect to win over a teenage white supremacist, but that's what happened to Jake.
It started off as hate watching, then it became, you know, I don't hate her, she's funny. And once you get rid of that hate, you can then start to actually listen to what she's saying. She goes about creating her videos in a very specific way. I couldn't tell you what it is about them, but you do not feel like you are being attacked. That's when I started to de-radicalize, so to speak, identifying less and less with right-wing ideology.
So what was that je ne sais quoi, that mysterious something that enabled her to defeat Jake's indoctrination? Well, it's partly location.
Young people are not watching MSNBC or CNN or Fox. They're watching YouTube.
Natalie Wynn describes a great war on YouTube, going back the better part of a decade. A battle for the hearts and minds of millions of Gen Zers and millennials. Today, she's lauded as the matriarch of the left-wing offensive, a budding community known as LeftTube, or inexplicably, BreadTube.
Comfort ye, my subscribers, so saith your goddess, for it is I, the digital messiah.
LeftTube's most popular creators, ContraPoints, HBomberGuy, Sean, PhilosophyTube, and Lindsay Ellis, draw in hundreds of thousands of devoted subscribers and enough money to make a living. And they don't just talk about the far right, they make mini art films about video games and literature. Outlets like Vice, The New Yorker, and The LA Times have held up Natalie Wynn and her cohort as an antidote to the political hate on YouTube. But she's not keen on that social media savior narrative. I was skeptical too, so I looked for proof. I interviewed 10 Gen Zers who credit ContraPoints and other LeftTubers with pulling them out of the alt-right rabbit hole. In fact, discovering LeftTube sometimes even sent them careening far in the other direction, towards Marxism and anarchism. So I asked Natalie Wynn about that term de-radicalization, what people think it means and maybe what it really means. I think they imagine somebody who wakes up from being in a spell and their politics reset to the center.
Yes.
But what I've witnessed is more people swinging from the far right to the left.
That actually is a more typical story. People who have very centrist views suppose that they are the default. But oftentimes, if people are into far-right politics in the first place, it's because of some deep dissatisfaction they have with life in the modern world. Where the far left and the far right are in agreement are that society is drastically flawed and we need revolutionary or radical action to change things.
For the YouTube left, that's meant celebrating egalitarianism and calling out the ills of capitalism. And for the YouTube right, it's meant mocking the so-called social justice warriors who say those things.
I would like you to use my pronouns if you could. They're I, me, and mine.
So now you're mocking the LGBTQ community now.
I have lots of LGBTQ friends, and they don't get professionally offended at everything. There's male and there's female. There are two biological genders. Science exists.
People purporting to use facts and logic to debunk social justice warriors.
Meanwhile, LeftTubers have become sophisticated storytellers, breaking down complex ideas using a popular format called the video essay.
That was really pioneered by people who do film criticism on YouTube, so people like Lindsay Ellis.
Lindsay Ellis is known for deeply researched essays on blockbusters, new and old, with a progressive take on character and plot.
All of the Guardians of the Galaxy conceit is about terrible people, made terrible by abuse, learning to care about society as a whole by learning to empathize with each other. None of these characters were born bad. These people can change.
Evan Heimbaugh, a 19-year-old white guy from Atlanta, told me that Ellis made him rethink propaganda he'd picked up from far-right YouTube. He'd grown up in a well-to-do libertarian household where there was little reflection on systemic inequality. Evan's transformation began with Lindsay Ellis' analysis of Peter, aka Star-Lord, a Guardians of the Galaxy character played by Chris Pratt.
Either one of you could have gotten us through that field. Had you flown with what's between your ears instead of what's between your legs.
If what's between my legs had a hand on it, I guarantee I could have landed this ship with.
Peter, we almost died because of your arrogance.
One of the things that got to me was when she defined toxic masculinity as a theme in regards to Star-Lord's character growth. I kind of bristled a little bit because it's one of those terms that has this immediate visceral reaction, but then she goes to actually define the term.
The simplest way to describe it is men feeling the need to prove their perceived masculinity through unhealthy means, harmful to others, but just as often harmful to themselves.
That's when it kind of occurred to me that maybe some of the things I thought I knew weren't exactly true. So I started watching more of the media-centered breadtube content, and that was kind of my doorway into it.
Evan told me that the Guardians of the Galaxy essay made him cry. Once he'd watched a few more, the algorithm began recommending videos by other breadtube creators, a sort of reverse alt-right rabbit hole. ContraPoints introduced him to a variety of LGBTQ issues. H-Bomber Guy debunked Sargon's anti-SJW talking points. Sean helped him learn about how our current form of capitalism has hurt people of color. Now, Evan is a political organizer.
Politically, I'm an anarchist. So I was de-radicalized from the right, and then I was re-radicalized back to the left. At that point, my thought was, well, I can't just, like, not do anything. I have to, like, be politically active. So now I'm working on a campaign in Atlanta. We're trying to get the Cobb County Jail shut down.
There's this assumption that logic will triumph. Well, I don't believe that.
Natalie Wynn.
I have, a very dark view of how democracy works. This is it's a circus, not a forum. Narrative, spectacle, style is the real force of persuasion a lot of the time. And this is something I've heard from a number of people. My persona seemed unexpectedly cool and self-deprecating and edgy. In other words, just drastically the opposite of what you expect from a so-called social justice warrior. None of this has anything to do with logic or evidence.
The power of Wynn's aesthetic was in her ability to build and strengthen what many internet commentators call the parasocial relationship. The illusion that we viewers really know our YouTube stars, that we can, video by video, pick up on their hopes and fears.
I know that there are times when I just want to die.
That's Oliver Thorne, the face and mind of a channel called Philosophy Tube, telling the story of a really dark time in his life. The video is difficult to watch, but really compelling. He told me that his feel for narrative and presentation come from his theater background.
Peter Brook has this concept of dead theater. It's technically very good, and all the acting's great, and the script is great, and so on, but it doesn't shake you, it doesn't move you or motivate anybody to do anything. And he says the missing ingredient, what dead theater lacks, is what is expensive. People want to see something that costs you something to produce, something that is brave or raw.
This notion of cost helped me understand the success of LeftTube's single biggest spectacle of the year and the effect it had on one woman.
When I came to college and I saw people that were a little alternative, I was like, oh my God, I am beset on all sides by shaved head, rainbow hair, SJWs. And I spent the whole time waiting for someone to put me in free speech prison, and it didn't happen. That caused a little bit of cognitive dissonance.
Joan's a college student from Nova Scotia, Canada. She was at a crappy, depressed moment in her teens when she started watching anti-SJW videos. She didn't know it at the time, but they really shaped how she saw the world. Joan would troll gun reform activists just to let off steam, spending like 10 hours a day on 4chan. She came across some LeftTube videos, but mostly dismissed them because, well, they're a bunch of social justice warriors. That is, until she learned about...
It's time for the Donkey Kong 64 nightmare stream.
That was the turning point for me.
Harry Brewis, known as H-Bomber Guy on YouTube, told his 400,000 subscribers that he would broadcast his play of this excruciatingly long vintage video game on Twitch, the live streaming platform.
He was going to play in its entirety on stream Donkey Kong 64.
To raise money for a UK charity that had attracted a lot of ire in the British press.
All the proceeds from this stream will go to Mermaids, a charity which works to provide resources and support to young people with gender dysphoria. Because as a person living in Britain, I find the media discussion surrounding this issue in my country, especially in its tabloids, to be woefully misinformed.
The controversy is a little bit like the Planned Parenthood funding debate here in the U.S. Last year, a group of conservative activists pressured the government to withdraw funding from the Mermaids charity. So the Twitch stream starts on January 18th, 2019, for 59 hours straight. Here we go. During the stream, you can see the cost of the stunt on H-Bomber Guy's sleep-deprived face. Meanwhile, Natalie Wynn, Oliver Thorne, and a bunch of activists call in to share their own experiences and support the cause.
Because I remember from, like, parenting a trans kid, how many people just said to me, well, can't you just make him be a boy? And I'm like, no, no, you're not getting it. She's a girl.
Live donations flood the screen. $5, $100, $500.
I think he expected to raise like £1,000. Yeah, the stream absolutely took off. And after 24 hours, he'd raised like 30 grand. After like 48 hours, it had raised even more money. And then Chelsea Manning came on the stream.
Update, Chelsea is here.
What?
Chelsea Manning is here.
What?
And then Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez came on the stream.
It's a no-brainer. Trans rights are civil rights or human rights.
Woo! Thank you so much for saying that.
And by the end of it, we raised almost $400,000. And I think Harry broke the world record for the most amount of money ever raised by streaming a video game.
Meanwhile, Joan is like having her mind blown. After the stream, she posted on an LGBTQ forum with a message about some confusing feelings.
I tend to like envy girls a lot or whatever and feel very self-conscious about my broad shoulders. A few people replied. One person linked a subreddit called r/eggIRL.
EggIRL, as in egg in real life, is a forum on Reddit with 37,000 users dedicated to memes about trans people coming to grips with their gender identity.
The term egg is trans terminology for a closeted trans person. It was the firsthand experience of trans people told to me through the art of memes. And if that is not something from the 21st century, I'm not sure what is. I spent hours just scrolling through the subreddit looking at memes going, oh God, I'm trans, aren't I?
Joan has just started coming out to her friends at school and says her goal is to fully perceive herself as a woman. Inspired by ContraPoints, she switched her major to journalism so she can learn the skills to start her own channel.
What Natalie has done with her channel is inspiring, and I would like to make videos that people find convincing and could help them if they're in a situation similar to mine.
Joan shows the impact of YouTubers like Natalie Wynn. She and the larger left-tube movement have thrown an escape rope to those who've slipped down the alt-right rabbit hole. But Wynn says she's ready for her channel ContraPoints to evolve.
It's just a very different world than we were in 2 years ago. No one took YouTube politics seriously. There's a million videos about all these topics. We've got this covered. There's so many people working on it now. I haven't mentioned the alt-right in a video in more than a year now. Where are they? After Charlottesville, they completely lost the momentum of the neo-Nazi wing of the whole thing. The prominent alt-light journalist Lauren Southern just announced that she's leaving public life. We have Alex Jones banned across most platforms. We have this like strong left-tube presence that has, in a lot of ways, surpassed some of the right-wing creators. So it's just a very different situation.
Left-tubers understand their audience and how they consume information far better than mainstream journalists do. They don't have the reflex of TV news to cover the outrage of white supremacy by extending their platform to it. Like on Tuesday, when CNN interviewed Richard Spencer on national TV, suggesting why his ideas are bad, while sharing them with millions. Natalie Wynn and other left-tubers have no journalistic training. They don't answer to a newsroom editor or journalism's unshakable faith in logic and evidence. But when it comes to fighting fascism, they seem to have it figured out. For On the Media, I'm Michael Loewinger.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Micah Loewinger, Leah Fetter, John Hanrahan, Ask the Chaturvedi, and Zandra Ellen. We had more help from Chloe Nosan. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Josh Hahn. Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.